Hello, photography lovers, and welcome to another episode of the Fashion Photography Podcast. My name is Virginia, and I'm your host, and George is our gorgeous producer. Every Wednesday, we're here with a guest, and every other Friday, I'm answering your questions and I'm giving you some little tips and tricks. My guest today is just so special because, without even knowing, he is one of the people who taught me on retouch. He's also literally magical photographer and has the most emblematic laugh in the industry, I promise you that. You probably guessed right and you already know his name, but just to tease you a bit more, here are some of the topics from today's episode. What are the most common mistakes people do when they retouch? The most important thing you need to know about pricing your work. And also the question, are there clients for conceptual work? As you know, this is just a little portion of all of the questions that our guest is going to answer today. So it's time to go straight to the podcast.
Hello, my name is Aaron Nace. I'm a photographer and educator, founder of Flearn.com.
Perfect. And tell us more about your background. Do you have any photography background or maybe retouching background? Tell us about the beginning.
My background is both in photography and in retouching as well as compositing. I started my photography journey about 15 years ago, and really at that point, it was just a chance for me to kind of express myself. I actually started out with a self-portrait project where I took a self-portrait every single day for a year. It was incredibly fun, and to add a little bit more variation to my photographs and create some more interest, I used a lot of Photoshop to create like fantasy type images as well. So that's really how I got my start, and I've been basically doing the same thing ever since, expanding on, you know, all types of creative ideas and working with fantastic people to try to create really interesting conceptual photos.
When was the moment you started with this? Was it a long time ago?
Yeah, so I started photography about 15 years ago. Basically, I took a trip to South America and brought a small camera with me. It was a little Canon point and shoot camera, and I took some really, really great photos on there, and that's what sparked my love and interest for photography.
This was a while ago, so tell me more about the Photoshop story and how you learned to use Photoshop.
I actually learned how to use Photoshop in college. I went to school for industrial design, and I used Photoshop quite a bit for things like product rendering and drawing. Really nothing to do with photos. But after I graduated from college and became interested in photography, I started using my knowledge of Photoshop to edit my images. And from there, practiced many, many hours over the course of years until I really felt like I could do just about whatever I wanted to in Photoshop.
Okay. And what was the moment when you felt like you want to share your knowledge?
I was posting my images on Flickr.com in 2008, and I realized that I had spent so much time learning photography in Photoshop, but there wasn't really a great resource for teaching the type of work that I like to do in Photoshop. So at the time, it was like, I have to make videos and start sharing this knowledge with everyone. I was just recording videos in my house, publishing them online, and I was really just kind of doing this for fun. It wasn't a business at that time. It was just kind of an opportunity for me to reach out and try to share my knowledge with other people.
What were the very first reactions of your videos? So did you feel like you were too shy to do it? Were people encouraging you?
Yeah, people were very encouraging, actually. And I'm a little bit of a performer, just part of my personality. I really like to be on camera and I like to be on stage. It's really fun for me. So that part of it was always great, actually. And people were actually very nice about it. And in the beginning, I started with just a few views, but as I created more and more content and became consistent with it, posting just about every single day, the views started growing and the reactions started growing, and eventually it turned into an actual business.
I know that this business right now is booming, so tell me about the team and how you gathered so many people around you.
Since the beginning, our growth has always been just a little bit by a little bit. we've never had like a giant or a crazy growth spurt. So I started out with hiring one intern who was working part-time, and then we moved that person to full-time, and then they became an employee, and then got another intern, and then moved them to an employee later on. So it was just every 6 months, maybe every year, we'd just continue to add people to the team as we continue to grow, and we've been growing ever since. So it's almost 10 years now, and the company is bigger than it's ever been, and we've got a fantastic team of people working both out of our Chicago office as well as located all around the world, folks who work distributed.
It can be very, very stressful when a company is that big because there are only two ways, you know, either you go up or you go down. And at the moment, of course, I'm very, very sure you're aiming at the very highest success that you can achieve. Do you want to tell us more about it and maybe even help us with the steps? Because this is a situation with many photographers and retouchers out there. After a certain point, they really have to hustle in order to achieve their best. What are the steps that you take in order to stay out of your comfort zone and achieve your best?
So I like to combine different interests of mine with my photography. For instance, I'm really into food. I love to cook. I love to make all kinds of food. I make things like kombucha and sauerkraut, and I'm into fermentation and just very, very curious about creating food and what I eat. So for me, food photography is a way for me to kind of express my creativity and kind of build out my passions. And this is not something I do for a living. I don't try to make money at it. I'm just having fun. But photographing things like food kind of just allows me to branch out my creative options a little bit more. And then I find that when I'm photographing people or doing my conceptual work, the concepts that I use and the skills that I learn with different types of photography actually come back and really help out my core photography, which is my conceptual portrait work. So I find that having different creative venues and being interested in all kinds of different things really does help out build basically my core of what I am known for as a photographer.
So we have to do also other things, not just photography and not just to stay in our comfort zones and do the photography that we are known for. Do you really think that you would still love food photography if this was what you were doing for a living?
I mean, I hope that I would love it. You know, like that's the goal, right?
It's true.
Try to love what you're doing every day. I mean, for instance, I record Photoshop and photography tutorials just about every day. That's my job. And part of that is loving my job too. So there are definitely times when it can seem a little bit like monotonous or like, hey, I've already done this before. But then it's up to me to find a new way to look at what I'm doing or change things up a little bit or just refresh some things in my personal life and come back to my work with a new type of energy.
Have you ever delegated your Photoshop work to anyone else?
No, I never have, actually. I mean, I'm not opposed to it, especially for photographers who maybe are very busy and just maybe not so into computers and things like that. I think it can actually make a lot of sense to delegate retouching and Photoshop work. But yeah, for me personally, because I love editing in Photoshop so much, I've always chosen to do my own editing. And my editing style is also very much a part of my photography style. Mm-hmm. So I think that delegating that to someone else, we would see a slight change or a departure in my personal style.
Yeah, there is always this chance of giving your work to someone else and ending up with a very different result, very different than what you have in your portfolio. So maybe you have an advice for the retouchers on how to expand their styles, maybe? Should I call it like that?
Yeah, I would say, you know, for retouchers, try to work with as many different artists as you can and create different styles with your work. Personally, my retouching and my style is very much my own. But if I were to work more as a professional retoucher, I would definitely try to create styles that looked like other people's styles so I could offer more variation in what I could do for my clients.
And do you think it's the same for photographers? Should we stick to our client style in order to make sure that we'll grab them?
Yeah, I think as far as commercial photography goes, I think it does help to have a certain list or something to be known for. I think it helps clients identify specialties, and when they're looking for those specialties, then they can identify that you might be the person that's a good fit for them. However, I think it's super important for all artists to do personal work as well, because that's where the creativity really shines, especially if you're doing professional work consistently. Personal work, I think, gives you an opportunity to do something that maybe no one would ever pay you to do. But oftentimes, the personal work can be very fulfilling. And I often learn a lot in my personal work that then winds up influencing my professional and commercial work.
I cannot agree more, to be honest. And I'm very sure that right now, the people that are listening to the podcast are wondering, are there actual clients for conceptual work?
Yeah, there are definitely clients for conceptual work, especially as brands these days are looking to stand out a little bit more. Images are always going to be a fantastic way for companies to make a statement with their viewers. And as we work with companies that are more willing to take some chances, that means the scope of what types of images they're willing to pay for and what types of photographers they're willing to work with, that's going to increase as well. And I do feel that we see quite a bit of conceptual photography in advertising and marketing and things like magazines and even billboards. There's definitely a lot of variation in there. Some things I see are more conceptual, some is a little bit less. But the idea of conceptual photography is a very broad topic. Mm-hmm. A concept, it could involve a lot of Photoshop. You could also create conceptual photography with no Photoshop at all. So I think that there's a very wide range there and definitely opportunity for someone who's interested in conceptual photography.
If you have to start today, what would you do in order to gain clients? This is my most favorite question of all.
What I would do is start creating work that I wanted to be hired for, and also start off with like a goal client list, clients that I wanted to work for, and create a balance between the two of those. For instance, if I wanted to work with Nike, the shoe manufacturer, obviously, they photograph a lot of athletes, and Nike is, I feel like, a pretty good company in which I feel like they do take some chances with their images. I mean, of course, they have their catalog work, which is just all photographed on white. But for their advertising and a lot of their campaigns, I've seen some pretty interesting images for those as well. So if I said, okay, I want to do conceptual photography and I want to work with Nike, my goal would be to create a portfolio of athletes that combined conceptual work and maybe a little bit of like catalog work, fashion work that also is focused around athletics. Eventually, I can bring my personal portfolio to a company like Nike and I can say, this is the work that I do. I think it'd be a good fit for you. And from there, work on a project together.
Do you remember your very first client?
I think the very first client I had was a friend of mine who paid me to photograph their wedding. That was what I would call it's very far from doing fitness inspired conceptual shoots for Nike. But yeah, I do think that was the first time I was paid to take pictures.
And what is the most recent photo shoot that you've had that is still very exciting for you?
Actually, last week I was in Alaska.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was fantastic trip. This such a wonderful, wonderful place. I had the opportunity to go to Denali National Park, which is about 5 hours north of Anchorage. In the park, Denali Mountain is the tallest mountain in North America. It's 20,000 feet. So surrounding the entire park, you have many, many different mountains. Mm-hmm. I was up there shooting just for personal work and shooting for the enjoyment of it. But one of the images that I'm most happy with is from an area in a river. So I parked my car and I walked for a while, basically went to a riverbed and photographed a beautiful peak close to sunrise from this riverbed. I shot it as a vertical with my camera in portrait orientation. I bracketed those shots. So I did an HDR panorama of the entire mountain. And this was something that, again, it was not a commercial job, but something that brought a lot of enjoyment and just a place that, you know, really spoke to my heart. So, you know, being able to be in that place and take such a beautiful photograph really meant a lot. And again, that's just on the more evidence of why I feel personal work is so important, because it can really help to renew my energy and my soul and my desire to be creative and my desire to take more photographs.
Do you ever collect images like that, like future projects or something like that?
Yeah. You know, sometimes I do take photographs without an idea of what I'm going to use them for, just an inspiring image that I see and something that I think, hey, this is just a pretty location. And then maybe a year or two later, I'll think of a concept for that and then use that location as a background for the concept. So I've got a conceptual image on my website, which is aaronnace.com.
And of course, it's linked in the show notes, just as usual, guys.
So if you go on my website, it's called A Dark Force. And it was basically, I wanted to make it look like people were photographed on another planet. So I took photographs that I had taken in the Utah desert in the United States. And then I photographed people in my studio and dressed them up like aliens, then composited those images together. So the final image looks like it's got multiple planets in the sky and far off civilization. So it looks like a completely different world. But that was just using photographs that I took on a trip and combining them with studio photographs.
Have you ever had a concept that have failed really bad?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. Of the images that I publish and show the world, I would say that maybe about half of the images that I take. Obviously, with experience, the idea is that more and more of your images will work and will make it. But yeah, especially in the beginning, a lot of my photographs, a lot of the ideas that I had just simply didn't work out. And that's okay, because a really good learning up experience, you know, not everything has to be shown to the public in order to get something out of it.
Oh, I love this. Actually, Eric Jackson from our Facebook Fashion Photography Lovers asked the question, at what point you knew that your skills was high enough to approach the industry as an expert? Because he says, I'm always second guessing my knowledge just because there is so much to learn and always new things to know.
I still feel like I have a lot to learn, and I still feel like my photography career is very young. There's always going to be more to learn. There's always going to be more to do. And I feel like that's kind of the beauty of photography and art in general. There's no right time to start. It's just kind of a leap of faith. And for me, I had a day job and I was doing a lot of photography on the side. And I decided to quit my job to pursue photography full time. And I'm glad I did, because I don't think I would have given photography and education as much energy as I was able to do after I quit my job. And quite frankly, I had no other choice because I didn't have a job. So I had to make it work.
Well, that's true. Once you're stuck, you get so many ideas on how to get out of the certain situation.
Exactly.
I know that you were approached by many, many, many retouchers. I'm absolutely sure of that. So what would you recommend to the retouchers on what to charge, per hour or per image?
Oh, okay. Good question. I actually usually work with an hourly rate. When I work with clients, I will generally give them an estimate ahead of time based on as much information as I can possibly get. With experience, generally, I'll know about how long a project is going to take to complete. And from there, we'll agree on that project. Sometimes we'll do a 50% deposit up front, depending on the client. I'll keep very good track of my hours on a spreadsheet and update them as the project is moving forward. If it's a smaller project and I say, hey, I think this will take me 2 hours to do and it takes 2.5 hours, and it's a small client, usually I won't charge them for the extra half hour because I told them I thought it would take 2 hours. If it's a larger client, generally I'll be a little bit more precise with my time because I know their budget is a little bit larger. And I always try to give a range of how many hours a project will take me. So I'll say this, I think will take between 4 and 6 hours to complete. I'll get the sign off. And then if I come back and say it took me 4, they say great. If I say 5, they say okay. And if I say 6, then they say that's okay too. And if I say it took me 8 hours, well, I would never just come back and tell them 8 hours. I would come back maybe in 3 hours in and say like, hey, actually, I think this is going to take more than my original estimate. Is it okay if we extend past our original timeline and our original budget? And if they agree to that, then I'll continue on it. If not, then we'll figure something else out.
This was such a great advice. Thank you so much for it. And what about your photography job? Do you do the same? What is your approach?
It really depends on the job itself. It's usually not an hourly rate for my photography. That is more of a day rate. So usually I'll do like a full day's rate and half a day's rate. And that, again, depends on the clients and depends on the job. Sometimes I'll just bid an entire job out. So I'll say, this is my rate for the entire job. As long as I'm here, as long as I'm photographing, I'll work to get it done. But this is what I expect to be paid. So it really is dependent on the client and the job. And also my rates will change as well. So when I work with a smaller client, like an individual, I'll have one rate. And when I work with a larger client, I'll have a different rate.
And that really makes sense because every project is very different. And if they're a bigger client, they obviously have bigger budgets. And do you ever ask your clients about their budgets?
Yeah, the very first thing is, what's the work and do we want to work with each other? Like, is this a good fit?
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, what's the budget? I think at the end of the day, that can be a little bit intimidating, especially for people who have not had a lot of experience in the professional world. But
yeah,
it's a business transaction. They put prices on all the food in the grocery store, right? Like, this is the food you get and this is how much it costs. Like, you don't get to the register and they're like, I don't know. Like, how much do you think this apple is worth? You know, it's like, that'd be very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You go to the grocery store. If you want an apple, this is how much it costs. And I think looking at photography and looking at creative-based businesses in a similar way is healthy. I think it's good for the clients and good for the creatives as well. Having the price very straightforward from the beginning means that everyone can agree on the services and the price. And if the price does not work out for them, well, that's okay. There's a good chance that someone else will be able to work with the prices that you set.
Absolutely. Not every client is your client.
100%.
Since we're on the topic of rates and budgets, do you think that we should ever work for free? Though you already mentioned about personal projects, and I completely agree with you on that. Actually, if you have any questions whether this is good or bad for you, we have a whole podcast dedicated to this. And it's linked in the show notes on photographypodcast.net.
Yeah, I do think that working for free is a good idea, but not all the time and not when it's something you don't want to do. I mean, don't get talked into working for free if you can avoid it. Definitely don't work for free if someone else is going to be making money off of this project. But I work for free both for my personal work and for my friends and family. I have a lot of friends who would like great photography, and I'm more than happy to do projects with them for free because I cherish them as people, and I'm more than happy to offer my creative take to help them maybe help build the brand or, you know, get nice photos of their family, whatever it is. So I'm all about doing work for free, but if I'm going to be approached by a larger company that has a budget, then that's the time in which someone should be
reasonable.
Yeah, exactly.
And the topic with friends and family is just such a long topic. Many people actually say it's a very bad idea to shoot for free your spouse. And I actually agree with you. I mean, at the end of the day and at the end of your life, probably, you'll be more satisfied that you have the right relationships and that you've given the most that you have to your spouse and the people that you love more than the money that you have.
I completely agree.
Oh, I love the way we agree with each other all the time. I love it. Well, then I'm going to go back to the topic of retouching. And there was something very interesting that you said, that you know how much time a project is going to take you. So if we're new to the retouching industry, what would you suggest to us, maybe to time ourselves in order to build this knowledge of our workflow?
I think timing yourself is a good idea, having a solid estimate of how long projects take you. And if you're not sure of how long a project takes you, let's say someone wants you to do simple portrait retouch, well, see if you can get a portrait and try to do a simple retouch and see how long it takes you just in your personal time. And then you can come back to the client and say, yeah, if it took me 3 hours when I did it on my own, I think it's going to take me 3 hours when I do it for you. That will, I think, come with experience very quickly. And then from there, figure out how much you want to be paid on a per hourly basis. And then you can just say, I think this will take 3 hours. I usually charge this much per hour, so the whole job will take this much. Or you can just say, yes, I will take this job and it'll be this much money.
Yeah, because with the time, I think everyone's becoming better and better at their profession. So maybe what have cost you 3 hours before is going to cost you just 1 hour now because you know what to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, but the price should not go lower just because the time you spend is less.
Well, you could do it either way, but I think the hourly price can just go up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when I was first starting, I wouldn't have considered myself an expert in my field, so I charged a lower price. These days, I do consider myself an expert in my field, and I charge what an expert would charge.
What was the hardest part for you when you were starting out working with other people?
I think letting myself get out of the way. In the beginning, I had a bit too much ego, and I think that was based on my insecurity as a person in general. So I didn't listen to other people as much as I should have, and I was a little bit less interested in collaboration. I wanted more people to just do what I thought rather than listen to their ideas. And as I grew as a person and became more confident with myself and my abilities, I realized that there's a lot of benefit to working and collaborating with other people and sharing ideas and building something together.
Oh, I love that. And I love the fact that you mentioned collaborations, because whether you're a photographer or a retoucher, it's always important for you to do collaborations, in my opinion, because this is something that can really help you with your portfolio.
I completely agree. You can do more creative work and get ideas that you wouldn't have come up with on your own through collaboration.
Recently, I had this conversation that I think you're the perfect person to talk to about. I was discussing what's easier, for a photographer to gain a portfolio or for a retoucher to gain a portfolio. For self, what's your opinion?
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, I think as a photographer, you can take your own photos and publish them without anyone paying you. As a retoucher, if you don't have any photos to work with, you don't really have work to publish. But you could most definitely, as a retoucher, offer to retouch other people's images for free to help build your catalog, provided that you built those relationships with those other people. So I think it really depends on your approach to either one of the arts, but I would say for a low cost, you could definitely build your portfolio as a retoucher or as a photographer. You would just have very different techniques on how you went about doing it.
I love your answer because it's different a little from mine.
What's your answer?
Well, I definitely think it's easier for retouchers, especially when we talk about the fashion photography industry connected to the podcast, of course. When you work in the fashion photography industry, you need a whole team. You need to have your relationship with modeling agencies. And even if you only do personal projects, it's going to take you a while. There is no other option. And if you're a retoucher, you can send like 100 emails per day. You'll sooner or later get an answer from someone. So it's going to be easier for you, in my opinion, simply because there are so many photographers out there today.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well.
And it's true, right? There are so many photographers and you need something to differ your style from everyone else's. So do you want to give us an advice? Because your style is just so mind-blowingly different from everything I've seen. Do you want to give us advice on how to stay as inspired to create something that is so incredibly different theme?
When I'm looking for inspiration for photos, I generally don't look at other photographers' work. Most of the inspiration or most of the ideas that I get for my images come from other areas of my life that are completely unrelated to photography. That helps my work not really look like other people's work because I look at other people's work because I love like friends and people in the industry. Like I love to see what they're doing, but I don't look at their work as like, man, I should do stuff like that. I did in the beginning because I wasn't that confident, but these days I really don't look at other people's work as a way to compare myself to their work. It's more just like a, hey, congratulations, you're doing really cool stuff. If I want to create a conceptual photograph or an image in general, I'm really trying to just base it on other interests in other areas of my life, pulling those things together. I also will rely a lot on dreams that I have and emotions and thoughts, other types of art as well, like songs, sculpture, painting, and even just being out in nature. I find that these things inspire me quite a bit, and I'm able to bring those inspirations into my conceptual work.
Dreams are actually a huge topic for me. I'm very excited about dreams and people dreaming. So I would love to know, what are your dreams like? It feels like I'm in your head. Do you dream very often?
Yeah. I dream all over the place. I definitely go through different periods of time. Sometimes my dreams are very vivid and it's almost like I'm really there and I remember every little detail. And then other periods, maybe it'll go by like a month or two in which I don't really remember my dreams so much. To be honest, I haven't correlated my life events with my dream states yet. I don't know why sometimes I have more vivid dreams than others, but that is something that I'm curious about and I would love to figure that out. But when I do have vivid dreams, sometimes I'm just like, wow, I got to make that into a picture. That was crazy. And then sometimes I'm like, I don't even know how I would make that into a picture. Like the pure visuals part of it is like, God, I have no idea how I would even make that. Dreams are very, very special thing and I don't understand them at all. But sometimes when a dream really sticks in my memory, it's a good place to start creating an image.
Do you ever write them down?
You know what? I don't write them down.
You should.
I should, shouldn't I? I've heard of creating a dream journal and I've heard of what a great idea that is. Do you write your dreams down?
When I have ideas in them. Can you share with us one of your weirdest dreams?
Yeah. Recently, I just felt like I was seeing just colors and shapes and patterns. It was almost like mathematic fractals. Everything had so much detail with it, and it was like almost like rainbow colors everywhere. It's really special. I don't really have many dreams like that, so I'm not sure what it meant, but it was kind of like just a sea of colors and detail. It was really, really cool.
Oh, that would be a very hard dream to write down about.
Yeah.
If I have an idea about a photograph, which happens quite often, actually, I will definitely write it down. It's a great method because I do forget a lot of my dreams. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I do forget quite a few of my dreams too. I think even way more than I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to do with how I wake up sometimes too. If I wake up suddenly, I feel like I remember my dreams a little bit more. If I just kind of like a gradual waking up, I feel like sometimes then I don't really remember my dreams.
I'm exactly the opposite, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Tell me about a project of yours that was inspired by one of your dreams.
It's called Baxter. It was based on a dream that I had, but also just like some childhood stories that I have where young boy has a stuffed animal, but then every night the stuffed animal comes to life and they go on adventures together. My image Baxter is, you can see the young boy in this image and Baxter, who's the stuffed animal, and he's come to life and they're playing hide and seek together.
Can we talk a little bit about the bad habits, and maybe you can share with us from your experience talking to all the big fans of the channel, the YouTube channel, and of course, the fans of your work. Maybe they have shared with you about some bad habits that they have connected to their workflow, and maybe you can share some of yours.
Yeah, so I guess one of my bad habits early on when it came to my photography and Photoshop and retouching was I'm trying to make images, but I wasn't using some of the more advanced tools in Photoshop, partially because I don't think I knew how to use them at the time. But things like using layer masks instead of the eraser tool, always making sure to edit images in 16-bit whenever possible, not using enough layers, using general destructive techniques versus non-destructive technique. That stuff was mostly in the beginning. I don't do so much of it these days. But I definitely learned my lesson the hard way, you know, when I tried to undo something and it didn't really work out. And it really taught me that it's important to practice non-destructive editing so you can basically undo your changes at any time.
What about the people that you talk to, your students, I would definitely call them? Do you see some mistakes that they do? Maybe the most common mistakes?
Yeah, I think one of the common mistakes is people take images that are maybe not properly exposed or maybe just like not framed well or not in focus, or they start off with images that aren't necessarily their favorite or their best photos. And then they go into Photoshop and try to work on them and do all these things to try to make them better. In some cases, I think that that's just what you have to do. But in a lot of cases, I feel that just taking new photographs is actually a much better approach. Starting off with a photo that already is good and moving into something that is even better is a great way to create a good final product rather than trying to salvage something. So obviously Photoshop can be used to try to salvage your images, but if you start off with really great images to begin with, then you can get some really stunning photos in the end.
I'm so grateful you said that, because working with the quality image in the first place is just so important. I'll fix it on post. It's such a bad mantra.
I completely agree.
Do you have your personal mantra?
I think that I have a lot of mantras, to be honest. I do practice a lot. But in general, what I try to do with my life is I try to be as healthy as possible with my mind and my body and everything else that comes with it. So that is down to the food choices that I make, exercising, and thinking positive, constructive thoughts in my head, and avoiding negativity in my own life whenever possible. So trying to basically make sure that I'm in the best possible place that I can be. So no matter what I'm doing, there's a good chance that I'm going to be in a better mood. And if I'm at work, I can perform better at work. And if I'm hanging out with my friends, I'm just more present, in a better mood, and a little bit better to be with, I guess, because I really value taking care of my personal energy first, so then I can give it to others at a very high level.
I think this is very important for absolutely everyone. And we should all follow your mantra.
What is your mantra?
Well, I just always try to put myself in the shoes of the other people, and I just try to be good to everyone. I know how it sounds, but I think that if we all try to do that, the world is going to be so much different. And of course, as you said, I do try to give as much as possible to my body and mind, because today, this is all that we have, I think.
I completely agree.
Very beginning of the podcast, you mentioned that you are really into food.
Yes.
And we are also. So what do you think is the recipe that we definitely need to try?
Well, I just made this week, actually. I posted it on my Instagram. So if you want to check it out, that's AKN as in Nancy, ACER. You can find me on Instagram. And I actually just posted this week. It is a banana, chocolate, chia seed pudding made with different types of coconut. So I use coconut milk, I use fermented coconut yogurt, and coconut flakes as well. And I photographed the ingredients as well as the end result and put it on my Instagram. So it's a dessert, but there's no added sugar. The only sweet things in it are dates and bananas and a little bit of coconut. I use fine cocoa powder that doesn't have any sugar added. So it's actually not very sweet. It's a little bit more on the bitter side. It's a bit of a healthy treat, but it's still very, very good.
I'm drooling all over the mic right now. So guys, I challenge you to make this recipe and attack him on your Instagram account, because I'm definitely going to do it. And then we'll gather all of the puddings together.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much for being our guest. It was such an amazing pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. This is so much fun.
It's a wrap. You can now take advantage of a special discount code that will give you 20% off a Florin subscription. You can find the code in the show notes on photographypodcast.net. It was so lovely to talk to Aaron, but the best part is that you are here with us. Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. And if you really love this podcast, please give us an honest review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, come back again on Friday for another episode of the Fashion Photography Podcast.